This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 5th of July, 2024. Hello. And welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. I'm your presenter, Barbara Kearns, and today I'm accompanied in the studio by readers Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
And Nick Kearns.
Hello.
And the first thing to say is please excuse my voice this week. I'm absolutely fine, I'm just a bit croaky. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please contact us on the number on the key fob attached to the memory stick. However, before reporting the playback box as faulty, do make sure it's plugged in and fully charged up. If you have a computer and tablet and want to listen to the recording on that, you can access it through the website www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Right, let's have a look at this week's edition of the Chronicle, starting with the news. Here are the headlines. Homeless man dies at car park. Sight loss charity chief in secrecy call. And festival organisers in bid to increase numbers. And the first headline story, Daphne, please.
Homeless man dies at car park. Police are treating the sudden death of a homeless man in a Winchester street as unexplained. The death of the man in public on Saturday, June the 29th, has saddened the local community, with floral tributes being left at the scene. The man, who was well known in the community for his positive comments and his dog, collapsed at the Middlebrook Street car park in the city centre around 6 p.m. Emergency vehicles partially blocked Friars Gate, causing tailbacks around the one-way system. At first, members of the public had attempted to save the man, who was named on social media as Ben O'Brien, also known as Bob. Paramedics took over, but they were unable to revive him. At one stage, there were 8 police cars and ambulances at the scene. A gazebo was set up to shield the life-saving efforts from passers-by. At the time, it was thought the incident might have been suspicious. All traffic using the one-way system around Friars Gate in Winchester city centre was stopped, and the roads temporarily closed. Stagecoach Bus Company reported huge delays. The death is currently being treated as unexplained, said a police spokeswoman. The deceased is said to have been a worshipper at Hope Church in Middlebrook Street, a few yards from where he died. Senior pastor Tim Blaber said, "He was very loved by the church. He had lots of friends and found hope at the end of his life. Those of us that knew him saw him full of joy." Friends passing by described him as kind and thoughtful and told how they got to know him from seeing him in the same place near to Middlebrook Street car park. They added that they were hoping to find the man's dog, who wears a black collar and has a gold bone tag. Sue McKenna, chief executive of Trinity Winchester, said, "All at Trinity are extremely saddened by the tragic loss of Ben. Many of our clients knew him and were fond of him. He was a popular person." Trinity is planning to create 3 new flatlets within the day centre to be able to offer safe space rooms in time for this winter. We hope this will help people escape from crisis situations.
Sight loss charity chief in secrecy call. The chair of trustees of a national sight loss charity is calling for this to be the last election that blind people can't vote in secret. Winchester woman and RNIB Chair of Trustees, Anna Tyler, wants access to be improved. RNIB's Turned Out report found that just over 1 in 10 blind people felt they could vote independently and in secret in the 2019 general election. Anna said, "It's been over 150 years since people have had the right to vote in secret, but this right still isn't afforded to many of the 2 million blind and partially sighted people like me who face significant barriers to voting independently. All polling stations are required to have a tactile voting device and large print copy of the ballot paper for reference. But voting remains a fundamentally visual exercise. Solutions with audio elements, or combining audio and tactile, do exist but are not widely available, with people with sight loss having to proactively request these from local electoral officials, who will then consider if they can obtain them or not. We've heard from blind and partially sighted people that they have often had to make their choices out loud, robbing them of their secret vote, leading to discomfort and uncertainty about whether their vote was cast as intended. Some have opted out of voting altogether due to these issues. And 42% of blind respondents to our Turned Out survey following the 2019 general election were dissatisfied with their experience of voting. She added, "As we go into another election, RNIB has contacted electoral officials asking whether they can provide audio devices to blind voters. Electoral officials have confirmed they will not be widely available, which will mean yet again voters having to share their vote. We are urging the next government to change this. Make voting accessible so blind and partially sighted people, like me, can finally cast our vote independently and in secret." RNIB has campaigned hard in recent years for accessible voting solutions to be proactively identified by both government and the Electoral Commission. RNIB has helped test devices which offer ways for blind and partially sighted people to vote independently. Although audio devices and combined radio and tactile devices are mentioned in guidance as possible equipment, they are not part of the minimum standard and are only provided upon request.
Festival organisers in bid to increase numbers. Only together can we make an event that works for everyone. Those are the words of organisers of one of the biggest music festivals in the UK, which is consulting over plans to increase its capacity. Boomtown Fair will be held for the 14th time from August the 7th to the 11th at the Matterley Estate near Winchester. They want to submit plans to increase the number of people who can attend from 64,999 to 75,999 over a three-year period. Organisers previously applied for the expansion in 2021, but withdrew the application in December 2022. Public consultation events were held on June the 25th and 26th at the Flower Pots Inn in Cheriton. The organisers explained that around 40 people attended over the 2 days. Shula Rail, Boomtown brand director, said, "We've had a steady flow of people, and it has mainly been local people from the surrounding villages. There has been a good mix of people with concerns and also support. People have been grateful for the volume of information and the openness. This is part of the application process, and the feedback we receive from here will feed into that. Our licence is already at 77,000 people, but our planning permits, 66,000. So we are trying to align our planning with our licence because we don't fulfil our licence due to our planning. Winchester City Council feels confident with 77,000 people, so we're asking the South Downs National Park Planning Authority if we can bring our number up to that. There is currently no plan to submit a permanent application. We have taken all the feedback we received on the application we withdrew and taken that into consideration. She added, "Only together can we make an event that works for everyone. We have a hotline for residents that is live at the show. If they call it, someone will come out pretty quickly to their home to understand what the situation is. If it's a sound issue, a sound engineer will come out and test the levels, and if it's too high, we can sort it." Nina Lloyd of Turley Planning said, "We have increased the quality of the surveys we have undertaken. We have much more information to be able to submit as part of the application. We have done 15 months of ecology surveys and extensive traffic management plans." This year, the event is called Chapter 3 Revolution of Imagination, with 12 main stages, more than 50 hidden venues, thousands of performers, and one secret lineup.
Thank you. That concludes the headline stories. I'll go on with the death notices now, and Nick will follow with Christian comment. Here are the death notices. Bartlett, June, passed away peacefully on the 8th of June 2024, aged 94 years. Cowan, Peter of Kingsworthy, Winchester, sadly passed away on the 9th of June 2024 at Royal Hampshire County Hospital, Winchester, aged 81. Crooks, Gwendolyn May, known as Gwen, passed away peacefully at Laurel Care Home, Calmore, on the 15th of June 2024, aged 96 years. Davis, Barbara, passed peacefully on the 25th of June 2024, aged 94 years. Eames, Jennifer Ruth, known as Jenny, peacefully on the 11th of June 2024, at Winchester Hospice, aged 85. Hall, Charles Anthony, farmer for 70 years at Corhampton Lane Farm, died peacefully at the farm on the 28th of June 2024, aged 94. Walter Richard John, known as John, died on the 12th of June 2024, aged 82. Weber Jean Nakeen, on the morning of the 30th of June 2024. Wright Frank Bryan, died peacefully at Winchester Hospice on the 15th of June 2024, aged 85 years. Christian comment has been written by Moira Redmond this week. The title is Every Human is Equally Worthwhile. Thank you, Nick.
This is rather unfair on my children, but is a true story. A good few years ago, my husband was going to have an operation on his foot. Not serious, but very much inconveniencing and immobilising him. We explained this to our two children, who were around 10 and 12, and told them that life would be a bit different for a few weeks. Mum would have to do all the driving, Dad would need a lot of attention and care, everything would require just a bit more effort, but we would work together as a family and it would all be fine. They said of course they would help. Of course they wanted to look after their dad and make sure he was okay. A short way into the recovery time, I asked them to help with a few extra household chores. They both looked completely taken aback and said, "What? Why?" I said, "There's a lot to do and I need more help. Remember how you said you would do what you could?" They laughed at the idea. "But this is nothing to do with Dad in bed," they said. They didn't quite accuse me of trying to cheat them with this request, but it was close. It turned out they had seen themselves ministering to the invalid, maybe carrying things upstairs to him, fetching him a book, plumping up his pillows. But running the household? No. "But think of all the things he does," I said. "We all just have to do a bit more." After some discussion, this was cleared up and they did take on extra chores and all was well. But I often think we are all like that sometimes. We don't quite get the ramifications of life, and that taking on something might be a bit more of a commitment than we think. Hands up everyone who thought when they first had children that they would be able to stop worrying about them one day. There will be easy bits and fun bits, but also hard bits, just like life itself. So, in theory, we want to be nice to each other. We see ourselves as kind, polite people who are generous to those in need. There are always heartwarming stories on social media of good deeds rewarded, worthy and grateful recipients paying it forward. In practice, helping those in need can be more tricky, and they are not always grateful or nice about it. At a basic level, maybe they don't like the food that you give them, or perhaps they have views that are abhorrent to you. But they are still human, still in need, even when it's inconvenient. And for me, Christianity steps in here and says, you still have to respect them and you still have to help them. The Bible reminds you that every human is equally worthwhile, and losing sight of that is a dangerous prospect. In Philippians 2, St. Paul says, let each of you look not only to your own interests, but also to the interests of others. It is not a flashy way to put it, but it works.
Thank you. And now this week's letters to the editor. Daphne, can you start us off with road petition, please?
Yes, and this comes from Mike Slynn. He writes, the article in last week's Hampshire Chronicle, June the 27th, covered the main reasons why it is unacceptable to close Andover Road and to divert its traffic through the centre of the major King's Barton housing development. But the article missed out on the key point of our petition, which is that a planning application is expected in summer 2025 to redevelop Sir John Moore Barracks with some 800 to 1,000 additional homes. This planned redevelopment is likely to increase traffic through King's Barton Major Housing Development Area to well over the capacity of the development's main road, Winchester Avenue. Both Headbourne-Worthy and Kingsworthy Parish Councils have joined with King's Barton Residents Association in stating that Andover Road should be kept open as a requirement for any approval of the redevelopment of Sir John Moore Barracks. Our petition is that Winchester City Council and Hampshire County Council should reopen or keep open Andover Road as a requirement for any approval of the Sir John Moore Barracks redevelopment. Your readers can access our website www.kingsbartonra/petition, and that's all lowercase, to read our petition and to sign it. And that comes from Mike Slynn, Chair of the King's Barton Residents Association.
And David Hughes has some more advice on how that could perhaps proactively be taken forward. Reverse closure. Hampshire County Council says that it has no legal powers to reverse the planning permission granted to Carla Homes that allows them to close Andover Road to through traffic and to divert that traffic through the King's Barton Estate, Hampshire Chronicle, June the 27th. I am sure that this is the case, but surely granting permission does not compel Carla Homes to do what that permission allows. It merely allows them to do so. No doubt there would be a significant cost to implementing that change, so are not Carla Homes at all receptive to the widespread concern and objections to this change? Why cannot these concerns and objections be reiterated to Carla Homes by both Hampshire County Council and Winchester City Council, with a strong request that that part of the planning permission not be fulfilled? The financial savings might well provide a strong incentive to accept such a request. And that one's from David Hughes, Downlands Way, South Wanston.
And the next letter is from Andrew Rutter, and it's headed Climate Change. The Secretary of the United Nations has told all member states that they have just 5 years left to stop overheating our wonderful planet if we are to avoid further deterioration, making parts of the world uninhabitable. That means this next Parliament. So far, I have received no campaign literature that mentions appropriate actions now as a topic. Although it probably seems not to be a vote winner, we have a right to know potential candidates' views and their sense of urgency. The next government needs not only practical policies now, it also needs to show imagination in reporting progress on the environment so that people feel encouraged to play their part. How is the Great Northern Forest from Liverpool to Hull coming on? Why not set a national target for replacing seagrass round our coasts, 97% of which we have destroyed, within 5 years to restore the home fishing industry? Perhaps modest funds allocated locally would energise Wildlife Trust to achieve this, and so on. Women just want a stable, healthy environment to bring their children into. Unfortunately, present world leaders seem trapped into a culture of war and war preparations. We already know how to destroy whole populations, so this may prevent the actions the UN Secretary-General is calling for in time. Resources are limited and govern government behaviour. There are too many weapons in circulation leading to corruption. We shouldn't misuse our undoubted technical abilities to meet this environmental challenge for the sake of our grandchildren. And that comes from Andrew Rutter, Quaker, St John's Road, Winchester.
And Roger Stevens writes, Facts of Not Fantasy, another letter to do with recycling, I think. I could not agree more with Helen Calder's incisive letter and meticulous calculations, Hampshire Chronicle, June the 20th. I emailed Danny Chambers on this very matter. I suggested that, as he wants to build a fairer Winchester, why not give the money spent on the overkill and Liberal Democrats pamphlets to some of the considerable number of the people he hopes to represent, who are struggling to make ends meet. I made it quite clear that we did not want to receive any more pamphlets, yet a relentless flow of them keeps landing on our doormat almost daily. Canute could not turn back the tide, any more than Danny seems able to arrest this gross deluge. Or should he concentrate on cleaning up our rivers, explaining exactly how the Liberal Democrats are going to do so, and how their plans will be funded? Enough of publicity stunts. If you want our vote, give us financially based, carefully researched answers, not unsubstantiated Panglossian aspirations. All for the best in the best of all possible worlds. Most sadly, that is not the world in which we currently live. And that one's from Roger Stevens, Cliffway, Compton.
Now, John Seager Green writes Surgery Surprise. It came as a bit of a surprise to learn that there had been criticism of Friars Gate Surgery, where I have been a patient for the last 24 years. Chronicle, July 27. Not only have I found the doctors looking after me during that time to be conscientious, very competent, and ready to react immediately to problems that arise, they have been proactive as well. I do not waste their time by making appointments that subsequently turn out to be unnecessary, but I write explaining my problem, have an immediate response, telling me to go to see Mr. or Dr. such and such at the hospital at a specific time, or have an appointment made for me to see the doctor, or told very politely words to the effect that I'm just getting old and must expect such a thing to happen. It's a simple, straightforward and time-saving method of communication, wasting neither my time nor, and much more importantly, the time of my hard-working doctor and the clinic staff. And it works well. And that's from John Seager Green, St Cross Road, St Cross, Winchester.
And David Lloyd and Rosemary Dunhill were equally astonished to read in this week's Hampshire Chronicle that the Care Quality Commission had rated the Friars Great practice as requires improvement, June the 27th. While we don't doubt that most of the services we receive in Winchester and elsewhere could be improved with more staffing and other resources, we have been most appreciative of the service and care we have received from this practice over many decades at both branches and over the phone. And that one's from David Lloyd and Rosemary Dunhill, Sunnydown Road, Oliver's Battery, Winchester.
And now a very short letter on the same topic, and it comes from Simon Lever. I am surprised Friars Gate practice has been noted for lack of attention regarding a couple of issues, Chronicle June 27th. From regular experience, including identifying a potentially lethal health disorder, all I can do is salute the practice and totally dedicated staff, from receptions to nurses and doctors. Nothing is too much trouble. I wish to acknowledge their vocational attitude and patient-centric approach, caring for patients. That's from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
Changing the subject now, and E. Mayer writes about petty conflict. I have been reading and hearing about all that goes on at the cathedral in the last week or so. Like many of your readers, I am shocked and disappointed by events. One would think that the cathedral hierarchy would be above that kind of thing. I don't know what is going on, but there appears to be some kind of petty internal conflict. This matter needs to be resolved urgently. It is damaging the reputation of a highly regarded and much loved institution. I find the whole thing quite heartbreaking. Andrew Lumsden should not be the fall guy. I do not know where the buck stops, but someone needs to take responsibility for this mess. And that's from E. Mayer, Berwick Road, Week.
And now another short letter from Tony Gaster. Headed football crazy. It's good to see a football competition adding some relief from politics. However, what has happened to our nation where apparently the NHS is failing and we cannot afford to pay our doctors? Our local councils are having to make difficult decisions on cutting costs, yet some football players who are, when all is said and done, only in the entertainment sector, are paid mind-blowing sums. Even the BBC rates its football show host as more valuable by far than any other. Have we lost the plot somewhere? Surely our health is more important than entertainment, however good our team is. And that's from Tony Gaster, Old Kennels Lane, Oliver's Battery.
And Peter Lydiard writes about email hacking. My email system was recently hacked, and there was potential for significant fraud. I reported it as a crime and received lots of online advice and contacts to try to ensure that it doesn't happen again. I was also pleasantly surprised a couple of weeks later to receive a follow-up phone call from Hampshire Police, checking that I was okay and that my email system was now working safely. I received an extensive email shortly after, giving me further advice. Not only that, but a couple of hours later, a police constable rang my doorbell to check that I had received the email and handed over a very informative booklet about online safety. Well done, Hampshire Constabulary. Peter Lydiard, Parchment Street in Winchester.
And now an even shorter little letter from Robert Craig, headed Wessex Week. Amid the alarms and excursions of the general election, folk in Over Wessex, Southampton province, which includes Winchester, may have forgotten to make preparations for Wessex Week in their region around St Swithin's Day on July the 15th. Wessex flags and bunting are available for those who wish to do so. And that's from Robert Craig, Priory Road, Weston-super-Mare, Somerset.
Good to remember.
Yes, I didn't know we were in Over Wessex.
Now, if you have an opinion or a subject you would like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836, or you can email news@hampshirechronicle, all one word, .co.uk. Write an old-style letter to the editor at 5 Up Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Right, we'll go on with editorial comment, first person and Belgarum. Now, the editor heads up her article this week with Tragedy on the Streets of Winchester. Nick.
The sun was shining, and it was a lovely Saturday early summer afternoon in Winchester. But the day was darkened by a terrible event on Middle Brook Street. A homeless man called Ben O'Brien died on the street, in public, as people were going about their business, shopping, enjoying the park, visiting friends. Passers-by administered first aid. The emergency services took over and battled to save Mr. O'Brien's life under a fire service gazebo and behind screens to give him privacy in his last moments. There was a huge police response because initially the death might have been suspicious, but now the cause of death is reported to be unexplained. It will probably be one for the coroner to look into. What is clear, though, is how highly regarded Mr. O'Brien was, with a lot of friends and acquaintances who liked him for his polite and cheerful nature in the face of personal issues. Floral tributes have been at the spot where he died, across from the Hope Church, where he worshipped. Mr. O'Brien was known to the staff and users of the Trinity Centre in Derngate, and its chief executive, Sue McKenna, spoke of her sadness at his death. She also highlighted work at the centre to provide more accommodation for vulnerable people such as Mr. O'Brien. This is welcome news because for the last 15 years, investment in helping people such as Mr. O'Brien has not kept up with demand. It will be interesting to see if that changes at some point following the general election, which will happen after this column has gone to press.
Thank you. In first person this week, Kimberly Barber writes about slippery slope of fake images. Daphne.
The hazy lens, the sultry look, the half smile looking back at you. This ad depicts those first moments when you wake up in bed with someone. It was not for Durex or Viagra or even a luxury coffee brand like Nespresso, all things associated with those situations, but for the Labour Party. And the person depicted, whoever dreamt up this scenario, had photoshopped Rishi Sunak's face onto whoever was really lying in that bed that day. Or perhaps they had asked AI. You can imagine the request. Create a realistic picture of Rishi Sunak in bed in the morning looking sexily at the camera. I hope Google is keeping a close eye on their search history, if that's what they're asking poor old ChatGPT or whatever picture AI software they are using to do. The ad slogan screams, "Don't wake up to five more years of the Tories," and then underneath, "Vote Labour." The picture is creepy. It's meant to be. It certainly grabs your attention. But should it be allowed? This election campaign has seen many tactics, backbiting, swiping at other parties, and false claims, but creating realistic mock-ups of real people? That's low. So proud were Labour of this fake ad, they printed it onto a pillowcase and got Keir Starmer to pose with it, even though national media were already reporting on its creepiness. Despite the fact that Rishi Sunak was the Prime Minister and a raging Tory, whatever political allegiance you may have, he is still a real-life person. A dad, a son, a husband. Is this fair or nice? You can argue that he's put himself in that position by standing in that role, by representing that party. But whatever terrible policies he's brought in, stood by, or voted for, has he ever agreed that his face can be used in fake situations? I think not. Where does the campaign move to now? Next time, do we get photoshopped AI pictures of the next Prime Minister riding a horse in the mountains with a bare chest? Or even worse, getting jiggy with a pig? As a newspaper, we pride ourselves on depicting reality, telling the truth and letting the reader decide. We do not accept doctored images. Only on very rare occasions will you see a picture used with a filter. Usually, if there are no other images and it's of vital importance to share the picture, say for a missing child. Throughout this latest campaign, my newspapers have run many political ads. Parties have used my news titles, still the most effective way to reach the largest local audience, to communicate their messages. We have had ads inside the newspaper, on our websites, social media pages, or as a wrap around the newspaper. They have all been clearly marked as advertising, and all papers were given an equal opportunity to take the space. One of the best bits about working for NewsQuest is that advertising and editorial remains quite separate, so we can never be accused of being paid off or swayed by the person with the most amount of cash. While you may not agree with the policies of some parties, in an open democracy, we believe it's important to accept advertising from all election candidates. Many people are mistakenly under the assumption that newspapers have to abide by the same rules as the BBC or public authorities, known as Purdah. We are not funded by public money, so can make whatever editorial or advertising judgments that we like. However, we will always be sensitive to the fact that we are here for the community and try to present a balanced view. In running political advertising, we make no endorsement of any policy, party or candidates who are all offered the same terms. It would be inconsistent if we were in favour of free speech, but only selectively. Ultimately, it is for you as the electorate to pass judgment on the candidates, not us. However, for the record, I did object to Labour's crass use of Rishi Sunak's face in their latest ad, not that I hold any clout over advertising space. The use of fake images, especially ones that some people might genuinely believe to be real, is a slippery slope, and we should all push back on this, because who knows, it could be your face being photoshopped next.
Bill Garum usually looks at Winchester from an alternative angle, and this week is no different. Nick?
Well, it is slightly different, because I think it's looking at Basingstoke from a different angle. Yes, it's entitled Hampshire from the Sky. Hampshire's lush, sprawling countryside is a sight to behold from the air. We were recently invited to Popham Airfield and taken up in a small plane on a clear, sunny day. John Chaplin piloted the plane, which he built from Popham to Petersfield, up the M3 to Basingstoke and Newbury, back down the A34 to Micheldever and back to Popham. Mr. Chaplin, 70, is chairman of Popham Airfield Matter, a group fighting to stop the 3,000-home garden village allocated to the site in the latest draft of the Basingstoke and Deane Borough Council local plan. And that short piece is accompanied indeed by an aerial photograph, clearly taken from a small light aircraft, because you can just see the tip of the wing. And most of the picture is taken up by a huge urban sprawl, which I believe is almost certainly what Basingstoke now is these days, with a tiny piece of green in the corner, which must be what's left of the green belt.
Thank you. Now let's take a look at what's on in the region over the next couple of weeks. I've got a couple of bits for you. On Tuesday, the 9th of July, Harbour, our summer concert with a sea theme. This is at the United Church on Jury Street, and it's an evening with shanties and songs about travel, the oceans and mighty rivers. And it starts at 7:30 and tickets are £10. On Saturday the 13th of July, Southern Voices have their 40th anniversary gala concert and reception. It starts at 6 p.m, tickets are £35, and it's to celebrate 40 years of choral excellence, and it's at St Paul's Church, St Paul's Hill, Winchester. Both sound like lovely things to go and listen to. And now here are the lighting up times. On Saturday the 6th of July, the sun will set at 9:21 p.m. And on Wednesday the 10th of July, the sun will rise at 5:03 a.m. and will set at 9:18 p.m. And now on to items of general news. Daphne, what have we got?
The first item is headed Dean Off Work as Bishop Orders Review. The Dean of Winchester has taken time off work amid turmoil at the cathedral over the future of choral music. The Very Reverend Dean Catherine Ogle has been at the centre of a storm over the departure of the Director of Music Andrew Lumsden and widespread concerns about the running of the music department, overseen by the precentor, Andy Trenier. The cathedral, in a statement, said today, "Dean Catherine is taking some time off and fully expects to return shortly. Precentor Andy Trenier is on light duties." This comes after the Bishop of Winchester, Philip Mount Stephen, ordered an independent review. In a statement, the bishop appealed for calm and gave more detail about the highly unusual intervention. He said, "On June the 18th, I announced that I would be commissioning a review of Winchester Cathedral under the terms of the Cathedrals Measure 2021. This measure states that the bishop may commission a review of such aspects of the cathedral's financial affairs, governance, management, operations or mission as the bishop considers necessary or appropriate. I am now pleased to confirm that Patty Russell of Winkworth Sherwood, a highly experienced ecclesiastical lawyer with expertise in both the area of cathedral governance and leadership and HR matters, will be conducting the review on my behalf. The precise terms and scope of the review are now being finalised. However, while the review will of course focus on areas which have been the subject of public concern, it is important to stress that its aim is primarily pastoral. The recommendations which it gives me will, I trust, enable Winchester Cathedral to move into a more settled future in which it continues to offer worship to God of the highest quality and to act as a sign of his welcome and love to all who enter into it. After a very difficult and painful period, I would ask all those concerned to approach the work of the review with grace and trust, so that together we can play our part in ensuring the cathedral enters into that positive and fruitful future." It comes after the resignation of Mark Byford, the senior non-executive member of Winchester Cathedral Chapter. Mr. Byford, former Deputy Director General of the BBC, who lives in Winchester, said he resigned with deep reluctance and disappointment after joining the chapter in 2017. His departure came amid concerns over the future of music at the cathedral. Initial concerns emerged following the announcement that the Director of Music at Winchester Cathedral, Dr. Andrew Lumsden, would be stepping down at the end of July.
Electrical work to cause disruption. Electrical work on the new Upper Brook Street surgery will disrupt the Winchester shopping centre, according to its director. Workers have already closed one lane on Friarsgate while a heavy-duty electrical cable was installed to connect the surgery to the main power grid. The road closure had been put into effect while Eclipse Power Networks carried out part of the work, with all lanes reopened on Tuesday, July the 2nd. However, Simon Turpin, director and asset manager at the Brook Centre, says that the work will impact the shopping centre and its tenants. Mr. Turpin said that the developers of the St Clement surgery will have to connect the building to the power grid at a point outside of Iceland in Middle Brook Street, and that the work will cause disruption on Friarsgate and Upper Brook Street as well. Part of the work will also involve the closing of the goods yard so the cable can be run underneath it. He told the Chronicle that a lot of heavy goods vehicles use the yard to unload products for tenants, including Primark and Sports Direct. However, with the closing of the yard for the electrical work, shops might begin to face issues with stock. He added, "With this change in weather, it has a huge impact on sales volumes. When the weather changes, people end up going out to buy new clothes. We will have to change how we get deliveries." The work will also see the Brook Centre car park close as well for a short time, as the developers move to install different parts of the cable. Mr. Turpin added, "It could cause bedlam. They are talking about doing some of the work overnight, but then we get issues about noise." He added that the Brook Shopping Centre has a good relationship with developers Assura and will be working with them to ensure the electrical work is completed quickly and safely. Mr. Turpin also said that the Brook Shopping Centre team is liaising with tenants to minimise impact as much as possible.
A beautiful day for St Cross Fete. The historic St Cross Fete was held last weekend, with scores of people flocking to enjoy the annual event. First held some 150 years ago, this year's fete was held in the grounds of the medieval Hospital of St Cross on Saturday, June the 29th. Hundreds enjoyed the occasion, which featured traditional attractions including train rides, a fun fair, bacon baps, homemade cakes and ice cream. Beautiful weather made for a wonderful day, as the sun beamed down glorious rays and people enjoyed traditional games and delicious food. Entertainment was provided by the Winchester Morris Men, 1st Chandler's Ford Boys Brigade Band and Punch and Judy. Father Dominic Chmielski, master of the Hospital of St Cross, said, "It was a privilege and a joy to see so many people enjoying the sights and sounds of the fete. I would like to thank everybody from the church and the local community who worked so hard to make it a success, and also to the trustees of the hospital for allowing the use of their grounds."
Workshops. Hampshire County Council is holding co-design workshops for the Full Flood Livable Neighbourhood Pilot Scheme. The Council launched a consultation into the scheme in February, with plans to find the best way to reduce city centre traffic, support healthier lifestyle choices, and invest in infrastructure to support sustainable growth. The Winchester suburb of Full Flood is the first place in the Livable Neighbourhoods scheme in Hampshire. The co-design workshops will allow residents to let the council know about recently identified issues and opportunities and highlight improvements they would like to see. At the time of writing, the council has arranged two workshops which will be held later this month. Each will consist of three sessions, each an hour long, which are limited to 20 people per session. The first workshop will be at the St Paul's Church Parish Rooms, St Paul's Hill, on Tuesday, July the 9th, with sessions from 3 to 4pm, 4 to 5pm and 5 to 6pm. This will be followed by one at the Log Cabin, Scout's Hut, in Stockbridge Road, on Wednesday, July the 17th. The three sessions there will take place from 11:30am to 12:30pm, 12:30 to 1:30pm and 1:30 to 2:30pm. If you'd like to go to one of these, you can book a place by visiting the Hampshire County Council website.
Archaeology Festival to return to City Centre. The Winchester Festival of Archaeology is returning at the end of the month. The festival will be held at the Winchester City Museum in the Square on Sunday, July the 21st, from 10am to 5pm. The event, organised by Hyde 900 in partnership with the Hampshire Cultural Trust, features the ongoing excavation of Hyde Abbey, a medieval monastery which was destroyed in the time of Henry VIII. Running through the festival will be a display of finds from community digs from 2016 to 2023, showing how Hyde has changed over the centuries. Visitors of all ages can take part in hands-on activities, perhaps creating a beeswax seal as was done in medieval times. Participants will be able to help prepare the wax for the seal and then impress the seal of the Abbot of Hyde's Seal of 1537, just prior to the dissolution of the abbey. Their seal to take away will be authenticated by the Abbot of Hyde. Other attractions include a tile-making workshop, where visitors can choose which pattern tile to make from those found in the cloister of Hyde Abbey. Tiles will be fired and glazed for later collection. Those over the age of 10 can try their hand at calligraphy, meeting one of Winchester Cathedral's team of scribes, watching a demonstration of calligraphy skills, and then having a go at calligraphy under their guidance. Meanwhile, Dr. John Crook will be giving a talk entitled "There's a Monk at the Bottom of My Garden" at St. Bartholomew's Church, King Alfred's Place, Hyde, on Saturday, July the 20th at 7:30 p.m. The talk will start by summarising the archaeological investigations at Hyde Abbey, which began in 1787, culminating in a previous community dig in 1998-9, which revealed the plan of the east end of the church. The community excavations organised by Hyde 900 since 2016 continue to shed light on the layout of the abbey, and especially of the archaeology beneath the 19th and early 20th century gardens established in the area south of the site. David Sperling, Hyde 900 event organiser, said, "Apart from John's talk and these really exciting workshops, a display of finds from the 7 community digs will illustrate the changes that Hyde has experienced from prehistoric times through to the current Victorian housing. More recently, the excavation of a culvert has revealed the likely location of the latrine block and the dormitory, which will perhaps be excavated in future community digs."
Now here's a report of another village fete. People roll up for the fun of the fete. People came from far and wide to enjoy Pim's ice cream and many cakes at Sparsholt village fete. With live music, traditional games and many beverages to enjoy, hundreds flocked to Sparsholt near Winchester about a week or so ago to experience a great British fete. The sun beamed down on the centre of the village as guests made their way around the various stalls to purchase crafts, plants, raffle and tombola tickets and more. Guests were treated to music from the Lockerley Silver Band, and a cake stall provided much needed nourishment to all in attendance. Police community support officers Michelle Wilkinson and Kerry Crutier were running a community engagement stall promoting the Let's Talk campaign, which encourages residents to share their views on issues which affect them. They ran fingerprinting activities and provided information on the latest scams to avoid. Also on display were various classic cars, including Jaguars and a Ferrari, as well as traditional games and the opportunity to throw sponges at people in the stocks. Children enjoyed a number of activities, including tractor rides, a treasure trail, welly wanging, children's entertainer, coconut shy, and much more. And the day was concluded with a parade of floats and attendees that headed to the Plough Inn for an evening of music and food.
Bus operator upping ticket prices across the county. A Hampshire-based bus operator has announced it is set to increase its ticket prices from next week. Stagecoach, which operates a route between Romsey and Winchester, is set to increase the majority of its ticket prices on services across the country. Day rider and mega rider tickets will also be increasing, which includes services from Winchester to Alton, Sparsholt, Alsford and Fareham, as well as around the city centre. The company has said that single fares remain capped at £2 as part of an agreement with the Department for Transport, ensuring affordability for passengers until at least the end of 2024. James O'Neill, Commercial Director for Stagecoach South, said, "Reviewing our fares is essential to ensure we continue to deliver and grow our network of bus services across Hampshire, Surrey and West Sussex. We understand that any change in pricing requires careful consideration. Following an extensive review of increased running and operational costs, we've strived to minimise the impact this will have on customers and kept any increases as low as possible. He added, "Revenue from fares is vital to pay for day-to-day costs of running bus services, continued investment in new vehicles, technology and other customer improvements. Bus travel remains fantastic value for money, and we've been conscious to keep ticket prices affordable and sustainable for customers, with some ticket prices unchanged."
Zoom Tiger dies aged 12. A much-loved tiger has died at Marwell Zoo after 12 years of life. Marwell Wildlife says it is deeply saddened to announce the death of male Amur tiger Bagai. The animal's huge personality will be missed by his keepers, vets, zoo staff and the thousands of guests who loved visiting him, come rain or shine. As an older cat, Bagai had been on medication for age-related symptoms for a while. His symptoms worsened and had begun to impact on his quality of life. The team at Marwell therefore made the decision to euthanise him on Monday morning. Carrie Arnold, carnival team leader, said, "Bagai had a huge personality that never failed to make you smile every day. He was lovable, goofy and cheeky. He was always playing hide and seek with his keepers, trying to hide behind rocks and plants, not realising he was bigger than all of them." Valentina and Bagai were a very close pair and could often be seen next to each other. They would spend time grooming, playing and sleeping together. We will be ensuring that Valentina is closely monitored in the coming weeks. Bagai will be missed by all who knew him, especially his keepers and the vet team. He arrived at Marwell in December 2013 after travelling from Germany's Zoologische Garten Wuppertal at 18 months old. He has played an important role in the conservation of his species, having previously fathered cubs at Marwell with former mate Miller.
Ex-newsreader joins in with Alzheimer's Research Walk. Southampton Common was awash with orange on Sunday as hundreds of people took part in the Alzheimer's Research's Walk for a Cure. People from all over the city took part in the walk, raising over £32,000 as of Sunday morning. The 5K circular around the common saw 450 walkers set off. The event, held for the first time in Southampton, was opened by Britain's longest-serving newsreader, Alastair Stewart, 72, who retired last year after revealing he was living with dementia and had a series of minor strokes. He lives in Bramdean, near Alsford. The broadcaster, who previously worked for Southern TV, ITV News and Channel 4, said the decision to leave the full-time role at GB News was due to his health. Mr. Stewart said, "One of the key things about this walk, which is brilliant to be involved with, is that it is raising an awful lot of money that will help find a cure, but is also raising awareness, which is why when I got my diagnosis with vascular dementia, we decided to go very public to encourage other people who may they think have got some form of dementia to check."
Health food shop to open on High Street. A new health food shop is coming to Winchester High Street. Grape Tree, chain selling nuts, dried food and other health food, has put up a sign announcing its future opening. The shop is vacant after the closure of podiatry and shoewear chain Chiropody on June the 19th. There has been a spate of recent shop closures in Winchester city centre, including Bell Fine Art, Echo, Mooch, Phase 8, CCG, Pavilion and Patisserie Valerie. On its website, Grape Tree says it sells whole foods and superfoods, including our own 100% organic range, plus healthy and nutritious snacks such as nuts, dried fruits and seeds. Our walnuts are a real food source. Browse organic, free from, raw and vegan product ranges. Our range also extends to personal care and beauty, minerals, vitamins and supplements. The Chronicle has approached Grape Tree for comment. It is a boost for retail on the high street, as many shops have become cafes or restaurants in recent years. The biggest is nearby Debenhams, which is being converted into three large restaurants.
Air Ambulance Aftercare Team supports 100 patients. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance's new aftercare team has supported 100 patients in its first year. The team is made up of two of the charity's specialist paramedics and an experienced nurse from University Hospital Southampton. They support patients who have been treated by the air ambulance crew as a result of serious illness or injury. Relatives of patients and on-scene bystanders are also contacted by the team and offered help. Since its launch, more than 400 patients, relatives and bystanders have been contacted with the offer of help, such as bereavement support, filling in gaps and answering questions based on each patient's care and facilitating meetings between crew members and patients. Gary Parsons, 58, from Eastleigh, had a cardiac arrest in a pub during a holiday on the Isle of Wight in 2021. He collapsed while he was out to lunch in God's Hill with his wife Penny and their two friends. He was treated and airlifted to hospital. He said, "If it wasn't for the Hampshire and Isle of Wight air ambulance team who brought me back after almost an hour, I wouldn't be here today. It took me nearly a year to fully recover, but I always had something missing. After such a traumatic event, I found it hard to get my head to understand what my body was going through. There seemed to be nowhere else to turn, but luckily, the aftercare team reached out to me and my wife, Penny."
On the sunny 10K run, more than 400 runners took part in the 16th annual Alsford Rotary 10K. Before the main road race on Sunday, June the 16th, Sunhill School organised three races for younger people around the field at Albury Park, where the first three boys and girls in each race were awarded specially made chocolates and medals from Chocolate Craft. All of the other runners received less edible medals. Originally conceived in 2007 as a community running event, the race has grown over the years and was once again part of the Hampshire Road Race League of series of races. The race numbers and UK Athletics licences were sponsored by Prospect Fencing, who have supported the event since it started. The water point on the race route was managed by the local Brownies, guides and explorer scouts, who did a fantastic job organising, handing out and clearing up nearly 1,000 cups of water for the thirsty runners. The men's race was won by Fred Slemick in 32 minutes and 21 seconds, and the women's race by Katie Gunn in 39 minutes and 41 seconds. All the results are on the Event Chip Timing website.
New lease of life for School Pond. A Hampshire primary school celebrated the opening of its newly refurbished pond. The Mayor of Winchester, Russell Gordon Smith, cut the ribbon to open the pond at Harestock Primary School. Parents, pupils and staff enjoyed the hot weather and listened to the school choir on Tuesday, June the 25th. Head teacher Amy Deer said, "Today we celebrate not only the opening of the pond, but our commitment to educating our children, including learning how to care for our world and our environment." The idea of the pond came as a vision to bring back life to the school's old pond, creating a space that serves as both a natural habitat and an area where children can go to learn and to support their well-being. The pond is a testament to the hard work and dedication of many individuals. I'd like to express my deepest gratitude to Lynette Healy and her team, who have been actively involved with the planning and creation of this pond. We're also grateful to the parents and local businesses whose generous contributions have made this project possible. I would especially like to thank Andy Lamb for giving an extremely generous donation. In total, we have raised £11,626. Before cutting the ribbon, Councillor Gordon Smith said, "I'm really pleased to be asked to open this pond. The natural environment is under a lot of pressure. In the last 20 years, the level of insects has been estimated to have declined by 60%, which is very serious. Creating ponds like this help insects, so it's a vital part of the ecoscape. Through these small steps, the environment becomes enriched." And that's illustrated by a picture of the Harestock Primary School choir, who look as if they are just about to sing. And there isn't a picture of the pond, which is a bit of a shame. I'd really like to see it after that.
It's all coming up roses at the hospice. A family visiting Naomi House gave a dozen roses to the owners for fulfilling an annual charity tradition. Each year, around Midsummer's Day, Naomi House and Jack's Place present 12 red roses as symbolic rent to Naomi and David Cornelius Reed. This practice has been in place since before the establishment of Naomi House in 1997. Their mother, Mary Cornelius Reed, had suggested the tradition. She had allowed the hospice to be built on her Sutton Manor estate, demanding in exchange the nominal annual rent. The hospice was to be named after her daughter. The tradition continued after Mary's death in 2014. This year, the roses were presented by Marlowe, a regular visitor to the hospice, her brother, Henley, and their mothers, Clara and Ali, following a brief address from the newly appointed Director of Care, Erica Lipscomb. One of the roses given, a hand-crafted metal rose, unveiled Naomi House and Jack's Place Fresh Garden of Roses campaign. And that's also accompanied by a group of people, in photograph, a group of people in the new gardens with the roses, and I suspect it's all the people I've just named, looking very happy. It's nice to be able to celebrate all the great work that goes on there.
Physiotherapy Group opens third clinic. A physiotherapy clinic is expanding with a third base in a Hampshire village. Physiotherapy and Wellness is opening its new clinic in Twyford on Monday. They currently have clinics in Winchester and Alsford, the first of which opened in 2016. Andy Lord, senior physiotherapist, said, "The clinic will be offering physiotherapy services to the area and in conjunction with the Winchester Clinic. Also, shockwave therapy, acupuncture, sports massage, yoga, Pilates, and VALD strength testing. We are a 7-strong team of physiotherapists and massage therapist, and are excited to be opening the doors in Twyford. We are opening our 3rd clinic to cope with the increasing demands for our services, already offered at the Rackets and Fitness Club in Berwick, Winchester, and in Alsford at Station Mill. We wanted to broaden our service to capture a new demographic in the south of Winchester and help them benefit in the way others have since our inception in 2015. By sticking to our core values, our patients can trust us to provide the best quality, evidence-based practice for assessment and treatment, in turn helping them to recover from injury and getting back to doing what they love. More information can be found on the soon-to-be-relaunched website www.winchester-physio.co.uk, all lowercase.
Author's second book published. A Winchester author has published the second in her series of illustrated children's books. Rose Lehu's latest instalment of her book, Tiny Dogs, called The Lost School Pet, is officially released today. The Tiny Dog series is about finding your voice and learning to speak up, even if we're not sure we're brave enough. Rose said, "I would like young readers to come away feeling as though their opinion really counts and to always look out for tiny dogs." Rose was inspired to start the series by her children's experiences and by her garden and other outdoor public spaces like parks and dog walking fields. It gathers a mix of events that can occur in daily life intertwined with charming fictional facts. The book narrates a young girl's story who attends her first days at school. It relates the strong friendship she maintains with tiny dogs that can speak, and readers follow her and her friends through their quest to find a missing hamster. The adventure weaves together the values of teamwork, mutual aid, friendship between animals and humans, and tolerance towards people's diverse mindsets that we encounter in day-to-day life. Moreover, it allows readers to ponder about pets and illustrates all the incredible things that children can achieve thanks to their motivation.
Family to take on Lake District Challenge. A Winchester father is taking on a challenge in the Lake District in memory of his late son. Nick Shaw, 62, from Winchester, and his son Alex, 30, will do the Pedal Paddle Peak Challenge in the Lake District, which involves a 30-mile cycle, 2-mile canoe paddle, and a climb to the peak of Helvellyn Mountain. The team of 4, Christopher's Champions, also includes Nick's school friend, James Sturt Scobie, 62, and his son, Will, 26. The challenge is in support of Muscular Dystrophy UK, the leading charity for people in the UK living with one of over 60 muscle-wasting and weakening conditions. Nick's son, Christopher, lived with Duchenne muscular dystrophy and died in March 2023, aged 27. Explaining why Pedal Paddle Peak is a fitting tribute to his son, Christopher's memory, Nick said, "Christopher loved travelling and being out in the countryside despite all the challenges that typically entailed. The Lake District was one of many places that he visited on multiple occasions. So when my son Alex and I both saw an email about this challenge for Muscular Dystrophy UK, we knew we wanted to do it. It wasn't difficult to persuade my friend James and his son to join us and make up a team of 4. Christopher was diagnosed with Duchenne muscular dystrophy, a progressive muscle wasting condition, when he was 15 years old. Nick describes Christopher as a cheeky, happy little boy, and the family travelled a lot together when he was young, everywhere from the USA to Egypt and Australia. Things got harder as Christopher got older, said Nick. He was in a wheelchair from the age of 12, and travelling became more complicated as we needed to consider how accessible places were. Despite the progression of his condition during childhood and teenage years, Christopher remained positive, and his motivation and strong family bonds helped him to achieve his GCSEs, A-levels, and a degree in illustration. He enjoyed playing video games with his brother and spending time with his family. The Pedal Paddle Peak Lake District Challenge starts in Penrith with a 15-mile cycle, followed by a 2-mile canoe paddle on Ullswater Lake. Once back on dry land, teams cycle to the base of Helvellyn to complete the peak part of the challenge, climbing to the mountain peak before getting on their bikes again for the final 15-mile pedal to finish back in Penrith. Phew, that's some challenge. As Christopher's champions, Nick, Alex, James and Will are hoping to complete Pedal Paddle Peak in under 9 hours and have been training for the pedal and peak aspects.
Oh, my goodness.
Hats off to them.
...of a fate that hasn't happened yet. A fate is returning to a Hampshire village and will see electric bunny races, classic cars and a dog show and more. Swanmore Village Fete is a popular tradition in the Meon Valley village, run by Meon Valley Lions. President Pete Meadows said, "We are planning an outstanding Swanmore Fete this year, with more attractions than ever before. It really is fun for all the family. If you haven't been before, you don't know what you're missing." This year's programme includes live music with Swan Samba's drumming and movement group, Swanmore Wind Band, and ukulele players from the Soberton Strummers. The Bernie Boozle Band will also provide their distinctive style of foot-tapping summer music. Swanmore's dance group, Roynan Dance School, will be performing. There will be a dog show and a classic cars display. Cars and bikes will meet at the rising sun at 10 a.m. before driving through the village to the fete. Money raised will go towards the Meon Valley Lions. Swanmore Village Fete is planned for New Road Recreation Ground and will take place on Saturday, July the 13th from 12 p.m. to 4 p.m. Entrance is £2 and will be free for under 12s who are accompanied.
Bluey set for rail line visit. Bluey and Bingo from the popular children's TV cartoon are coming to the Watercress line from August the 9th to the 11th. Young fans can meet their favourite Healer sisters for photo ops at Ropley Station. Ensuring a summer of smiles, the duo promise regular appearances for fans to savour. Alongside, there's family fun with steam train rides along the scenic railway route. Children's activities include miniature railway rides, a play area at the locomotive playground, scavenger hunts, and following a young engineer's trail.
Beautician of the Year. It is time to nominate your favourite beautician or salon to be named Hampshire Chronicle Beauty Therapist of the Year 2024. Nominations will be open until July the 26th, and from there we will collate our submissions to create the shortlist. We will then publish the top 10 beauty salon beauticians as chosen by our readers, along with a coupon, so that you can vote the week beginning August the 12th and 19th. Buy a copy of the paper and find the nomination coupon inside to cut out. Fill in the details, then post to Hampshire Chronicle, Bronzy Advertiser, Beauty Therapist of the Year, Fleet House, Hampshire Road, Weymouth, DT49XD.
Well, I'm sorry to say that's all we have for you this week. When you've finished with the recording, please put the memory stick back into the wallet, place the correct address label on the front of the wallet, and return it as soon as possible. Thanks to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition. Excuse me. And of course, many thanks to our readers, Daphne Poupart.
Goodbye.
And Nick Kearns.
Goodbye.
And from me, Barbara Kearns, thank you for listening. Until the next time, goodbye and have a great week.